Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Net Gains, the podcast by Paddle Stars, where we talk all things paddle, business and startups. And today we're joined by a really exciting guest. He's the face of Playtomic for UK and Ireland, Alan Douglas. Alan, welcome.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Yeah, I really appreciate you flying in for this episode.
I'm sure
you're doing other business in the UK, but I'm going to assume it's just to join me on the pod. For those that don't know you, could you kickstart by giving a little bit of insight into your backstory and how you got involved in Paddle and Playtomic, just to set the scene, please?
Yeah, sure. So my background is tech. I've been involved in tech and software since too many years ago. And I had a small business, which was an online booking platform for squash, tennis, badminton, etc. And about a little over four years ago, Pablo, who's one of the co-founders of Playtomic, reached out to me and said, Playtomic's coming to the UK. We see it as a big opportunity, a big market. We'd like to buy your company. And so I went along with the deal. And 4 years later, I'm still here. So they used my business as a springboard into the UK. I had a footprint in the UK. And really to use that and drive the growth of Paddle predominantly through the UK.
Wow. So the opportunity found you.
Yeah, exactly. Pablo found me.
Yeah. And I mean, do you ever have any what could have been moments should you not have accepted that offer?
A good question. I think, well, I'm still here 4 years later.
Yeah.
So I'm still here because it's a lot of fun. Paddle is a really nice industry to be involved in. It's one of those industries that puts a smile on people's face. It's healthy. It's good for mental health, well-being. Playtomic as a company is a really nice company to work with. The people are really cool. And we're in a great industry, in a booming industry, which is nice. But it's one of those industries, and you know you play paddle, people come off the paddle court and they've got a big smile on their face.
Yeah.
And it's just really nice to be involved in that. So I'm still here having fun.
That's a really lovely way of like summarizing Paddle, actually. You've put that so beautifully.
It is. You know, you have an hour's sweat with your friends.
Yeah.
You come off, you've got a big smile on your face. It's a fantastic sport.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a really fun space to be in, because a lot of people I also know that aren't in the industry, they just kind of ask like, what does it feel like? You hear about it all the time. It's such a hot sport at the moment, or such a hot topic at the moment. And yeah, it is actually just generally really good fun. And you're kind of being swept along. So you feel like you've got to ride the wave almost.
There's something intrinsic about paddle. It's just an addictive sport. People who would never dream of playing tennis or joining a tennis club get dragged along to a paddle court by one of their friends who plays paddle, and they're instantly hooked. If you could bottle it, you'd be a billionaire. There's something intrinsic about paddle that just makes people smile and enjoy it. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's a beautiful line. Bottle it and you'd be a billionaire. What have you seen evolve in the last 12 months in the UK paddle scene?
A few things, but specifically the emergence of chains, really 12, 18 plus months, as you know, their first club is a success. They go back to their investors and say, you know, look at the numbers. This is real.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity here. And so then they open their second club, which would typically be regional. So you might have two clubs in Manchester or what have you. But those chains now are beginning to look further afield. They're beginning to come sort of national, or they've got national ambitions. So you wouldn't be restricted to having two clubs in Manchester. You're now looking at Gloucester, example, somebody we all know. And then maybe you're looking at the Northeast. The chains are becoming national, or beginning to become national.
People are casting their net wider.
Yeah. They are.
I mean, I think we're probably doing the same. I think we were pulling our hair out because we're like we're supposed to be building in the southeast only, but right now we're building in Basildon, and we're building in we've just finished a build in Egham, and we're building down in Bournemouth. And yeah, it is I think, yeah, everyone's being a bit more braver to cast their net wider. But
yeah, and you can pick that model up. You know, you prove your model in one location, you pick it up and you drop it in another location. There'll be differences in terms of price and local demographics. As an example, here's one of the things I always get asked. I speak to so many people every week. I'm in a very privileged position. One of the things that lots of people ask me are, what should we charge? We're going to build in this town or city. What's a good price per hour, per player? And I'll share a secret with you, and don't tell anybody. But as a rule of thumb, my answer is generally this. If I were to go to a nice family restaurant, Italian restaurant, in your catchment area, and I were to buy a nice mid-range glass of wine, what would I pay for that glass of wine? It might be 8, 9, 10 pounds, depending on, or if you're in Canary Wharf, it might be £20.
Yeah.
There's your price per player per hour.
Oh, wow.
As a rule of thumb. Because you can pick that
great
model
top tip. I'm going to be using that.
You can pick that model up and put it anywhere. You can put it in Canary Wharf.
Yeah.
You can put it in Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle, Swansea, Cardiff, and it generally works.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thanks for that. Love that.
Don't tell anyone.
Oh, I'll try not to. So actually, I want to kind of get into the nitty gritty. So you get to meet a lot of operators. You travel up and down the UK. Most UK operators are on your platform. Have you seen any clear divides or tensions between the operators or governing bodies when it's when it's coming to sort of shaping the sport?
Not really. Padel is very much driven by entrepreneurs who are commercial businesses. They're in it for profit, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's not a dirty word. Whereas traditionally tennis clubs have been community owned, committee driven, etc., and not particularly profit driven. So there's a divide there between the way that traditional tennis, squash would work, and how padel is evolving in the UK. But I personally think tennis and padel are bedfellows. I think they can work really well together. So here's an example. East Dorset Lawn Tennis Club. They went live on our platform early summer last year. 3 outdoor padel courts. And you know what it's like in business. People generally don't ring you to say thank you very much. They ring you because they want something or they want
to complain.
They want to complain. And Max, the chairman from East Dorset, called me about 8-12 weeks after they opened, and he just called and he said, Alan, I just wanted to say thank you for your help and advice, etc. He said, you told us to put 55% occupancy in our business plan, just to be conservative. He said, we've been 85% booked since we opened. We've got revenues we never dreamt of, and that's going to feed into the tennis. It's going to help us invest in our junior tennis programs, our pathways. It's going to lift the infrastructure of the whole club. So I think tennis and padel can work really well together, and I think that's the way it will evolve.
Yeah, I think so too. And actually, how nice. So shout out to East Dorset Tennis
East
Club
Dorset
for saying
Lawn,
thank you.
Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club.
Are there any clubs and regions that you are seeing are absolutely smashing it? And are there areas that you feel that might be underperforming at the moment and there's sort of room for growth?
Manchester is the hotbed of padel right now in the UK.
Yeah.
It's absolutely booming. London is big in padel as well. Yeah. But of course, the challenges in London are finding sites because A, it's expensive, and B, you're competing with, a lot of logistics companies who want the indoor barns and warehouses. So Manchester, absolutely booming. Lots of clubs, occupancy rates through the roof, off the charts. The northeast of England is beginning to wake up. So Durham and Sunderland and Newcastle, Birmingham, Leeds, Nottingham, that's beginning to wake up. Obviously, Bristol's well represented. Yeah. Underrepresented, probably Scotland. And I say that with a heavy heart because I live in Scotland. And for me to play padel, it's an hour and 15 minute drive.
Oh, wow.
Which is tough.
Yeah.
So Scotland, it's a small country compared to England. But, Edinburgh, Glasgow, underrepresented, I think, in terms of padel. Could do better.
Anyone looking for sites, that's where you've got to go and focus.
Yeah.
And without naming names, have you had to deal with Any politics or turf wars in the UK paddle scene?
Not really. I don't sort of get involved in that side of things. My job is to help the clubs launch properly, launch with as big an impact as they can, maximize their occupancies. What happens behind the scene is the side of the fence that I don't really get to see. I'm sure, you know, the operators are competing with each other for sites. Because that's the number one challenge in terms of growing a paddle club or a paddle chain. The two biggest challenges that I've seen since I started with Playtomic are finding sites and getting through planning. And if you get those two things, then you hold all the cards.
Yeah.
You've got the aces. So the chains and the operators are competing for sites. Quite how hard they're competing in the background, I don't know, because I don't get to see that.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing with the platform is, because I come from a hospitality background, so what you do is if you're in a marketplace where there's lots of other operators, you're keeping an eye on your pricing, ultimately, because you've got others on your doorstep that you're competing with. And I suppose that's what Playtomic allows. It kind of allows you oversight of what the competition are doing around you to kind of shape your offering. And I guess that will become more and more apparent as the sport grows and there are more operators in an area. So we might see a bit more of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really like that word. And I think you're right. Paddle is a hospitality business with a sport, with paddle inside it. So rather than looking at it as a pure paddle play, the offering and the experience that you give to players that makes them come back and love your club is really a hospitality business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the questions, so we put it out to our audience across a number of platforms, like, what question would they like us to ask you? One of the ones that popped up frequently was to, in your opinion, what do you feel is the real reason that some clubs and operators may choose not to be on the Playtomic platform? And do you think that's sustainable in the long term, seeing, you know, how many operators are on the platform?
Well, in 2024 in the UK, 86% roughly of the paddle hours in the UK were sold through Playtomic. Now, I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And the reason is we're a marketplace. We're a bit like Amazon, but smaller. We bring buyers and sellers together. People list their products on Amazon because that's where the buyers are. People list their clubs on Playtomic because that's where the players are. The clubs we tend not to have, there's a couple of chains we don't have because there's competition out there and competition's healthy. And the other sort of paddle courts that we don't have on our platform tend to be one or two courts at a tennis club. So we are the dominant player in the UK. I mean, worldwide, we're the dominant player. We've got 6,500 paddle clubs worldwide use our platform. And like I say, about 86% of the paddle hours sold in the UK last year. I'm sure the other operators who use different platforms will survive and thrive in their own way. But if you really want to give yourself, and I will say this because I have to, if you really want to give yourself the best possible opportunity of launching and being successful in the long run, you know, here we go.
You know where you need to be.
You have to be on Playtomic.
Yeah. And we touched on this a bit in the green room. Do you think there's a bit of a goal rush mentality right now with people launching paddle clubs without fully understanding the market? Or, I mean, we were talking about, you know, people going in and get sort of agreeing to high rents and things like that. So what is kind of your view on that?
It's a boom industry, that's for sure. It's booming. It tripled in the market size in the UK tripled in 2024. And we were talking before, I said before that the two hardest things are to find a site and to get through planning. And I think if you manage to go through that journey as an entrepreneur or an investor and find a site and get heads of terms or get a lease or buy a site and then get through planning, it probably means that you're a serious individual, because that's not an easy journey.
Yeah.
And I think on that journey, it sort of weeds out any cowboys who think, there's a booming industry, I'll make a quick buck, I'll throw up two or three paddle courts somewhere and, you know, I'll make some money for the next year or two. I think the effort and the investment in terms of time and money it takes you to get through finding a site, convincing a landlord, getting through planning, weeds out most of the cowboys, I think. It feels like that to me, because the people who emerge at the end of that are doing it properly. They have to. You know, yeah. If you are going to a bunch of investors and asking for, you know, $1 million, $5 million, whatever, to build a paddle chain, you're going to have to be a serious individual to convince them to invest in you. And then to get through planning takes time.
Yeah, and a long time.
Yeah, and I've actually come to believe, you know, entrepreneurs get frustrated at the planning authorities because entrepreneurs want things to happen next week, the week after. You want a planning decision in 4 weeks. But I've come to believe in the last year or two that actually it's a good thing in the long run for paddle. And I think it means it will be sustainable because the people who end up getting through planning are doing it properly. Yeah. And we're not going to have a situation where paddle courts are just being thrown up everywhere. And then in 5-10 years time, that's unsustainable. I think the clubs that are being built are sustainable in the long run because you have to go through that difficult process.
And how do you see the clubs, obviously, because you get to travel a lot and see clubs all across the world. How do you see the club scene in the UK differ to a paddle club in Spain, for instance, or Sweden or the US?
From what I've seen, the clubs that are emerging in the UK are really, to pick up your word again, building that sort of hospitality destination quality environment. Now, that's not to say that Spain and Sweden don't have quality clubs. Of course, they do. But from what I've seen and what I'm seeing, you know, the clubs that are being built are very much focused on the player experience, food and beverage, sitting areas, that real sort of that hospitality vibe.
Well, get them in and keep them there.
Yeah. You know, you want players to come back. Yeah. You know, like any industry, recruiting customers is the expensive bit. Mm. You want them to come back because it's that's.
Yeah. A repeat customer is always.
Exactly.
Is always ideal.
Yeah.
And I guess that's everybody's long-term aim, you know. And it's also, as an operator, we always feel that it's actually a real privilege that someone has chosen to spend their free time in something that we've built and created.
Yep.
And I think always having sight of that and never taking that for granted is going to be really, really important, especially, you know, as you scale and you're rolling out more and more clubs and there's more and more operators.
Yep.
And I think that also will set people apart from each other.
Yeah, well, players play at more than one club.
They do, yeah.
The data shows that. Now, part of that is because there aren't enough clubs in the UK right now, and finding an empty hour to play paddle at, you know, 4 or 5 p.m., which, you know, into the peak periods is tough.
Yeah.
At the good clubs, you know, so if it's full, you go to a different club.
But I love that because it's kind of like you've got all your little sort of pockets of friends that in different clubs as well.
Yeah.
Like how unique is that experience? What other sport would kind of have that player experience or that player journey that, you know, I go here and I meet this group of friends and then, you know, on the same day at 5 p.m., I might be at that club across town and I'm playing with a different circle of friends, you know?
I think
it's so unique and really, really special.
Yeah, I might play the Saturday social mix-ins at Rocks Lane and then I might play with my friends at Canary Wharf or O2 or Earls Court or whatever, you know? Yeah, you just bounce around.
Yeah. And I've seen recently a couple of other new booking platforms come out the woodwork, you know, a few newbies out there. And are you seeing them as competition or a threat in any shape or form? Or do you think Playtomic's already sort of miles ahead?
Well, we are. You know, 86% of the UK market puts us in a dominant position. But, you know, we always keep an eye on the competition. Competition's a healthy thing.
Healthy, yeah.
For us as a booking platform, as an app company, for you as a paddle operator, competition keeps you honest, keeps you on your toes, keeps you investing in that player experience. Yeah, we keep an eye on them. I think it's quite flattering that the competition's emerging because they see what a great business Playtomic is, and they think, okay, we want some of that. It's a compliment. We keep an eye on it, and it it drives us forward.
Yeah.
Like any business.
Well, it does. I mean, you've recently announced some really exciting developments just in the booking platform. So has that come about now, you know, as a market sort of grown and sort of operator feedback, and then also sort of seeing what else is coming out there, sort of what the audience are asking for and these new apps are possibly offering?
Most of it is driven by the operators and the players, what they ask us for. We don't mimic the competition. We listen to the customers.
Mm.
So as the chains are emerging in the UK, so 4 years ago when I joined Playtomic, there were about 3 paddle clubs in the UK.
Yeah.
And now there's, you know, 100 plus. And so we listen to them. And over the last 4 years, some of these clubs have started to emerge into chains because their first site is very successful. So they go back to their investors and say, you know, look at the numbers. We'd like to build a second site and a third. And the requirements from the chains are different requirements to those from, you know, if I was to build a 3-4 court paddle club in my local town, and that was my ambition, that's great. I've got a set of requirements that I need from an app and from a booking platform. But somebody like yourself, who's got 4, 5, 6 sites and ambitions to build another 5, your requirements as a business are different, particularly in terms of data and understanding your players. So a lot of the tools that we're building is very much aimed at providing better access to the huge amounts of data we have to the clubs, so that to help them be as good as they possibly can and react to their players and understand their players.
Yeah. And I guess what do you see the user data and patterns, like what are they telling you about the UK paddle player that is different to other markets?
Well, I focus exclusively on the UK and Ireland. So I don't really look at the data for Spain or America, for example. But some of the big patterns in the UK would be something that surprises me, the amount of times per week players are playing.
Yeah.
You know, 2-3 times a week.
2-3 times a day.
Yeah.
We've seen this.
Yeah, you know, which to me, I'm a squash player. I come from a squash background. You know, once a week is enough for me to play squash, but paddle players are playing 2-3 times per week. And like I said before, they're playing at different clubs, which is a great dynamic. It's an incredibly healthy industry to be in.
So do you think, I mean, I'm sure you talk to your colleagues. So in other marketplaces, are people more sort of loyal to the location that they're visiting? Like in Spain, for instance, are people just sort of going to their club in, you know, their local club?
No, I think players are playing at multiple clubs around the world.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's actually paddle behavior generally is not just UK. It's just not just a UK thing. It's actually the sport. It's a behavior of the sport.
I think so.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a member of a tennis club, you play at that tennis club.
Very much.
Or a member of a squash club like me, I play at my squash club.
Mm.
But paddle, I might turn up to a social mix-in on a Saturday morning somewhere.
Not know anyone else.
I'll join an open match somewhere else because I've got a free evening on a Wednesday night, so I'll look for an open game, join that. I might be in a league somewhere else. It just feels like it's part of paddle.
Yeah. And in your opinion, who are the unsung heroes of the UK paddle scene that more people should know about?
There's a few. I think if I was to pick one, if you put me on the spot, I would probably single out Chris Warren at Roxlane in Chiswick. He was one of the real early adopters of paddle. He's one of those 3 original clubs that I first encountered. He puts a lot of time into paddle, into juniors. He started last year with the European Paddle Tour for seniors. He's putting his own money, his own time, his own effort into that. And he's one of those people that I will send potential paddle operators to because he's very generous with his time and his knowledge. So I think to put me on the spot, I'd probably say Chris Warren at Roxlane.
And how important do you think it is that we have more Chris Warrens, you know, operators that spend time with others that are serious about getting into the marketplace? Because I guess you can look at it 2 ways. That there is, so I was traveling recently and there is a perception that the UK paddle scene is quite cutthroat and competitive in other international markets. It's just their view on us. But ultimately, we need to collaborate for the growth of the sport and for awareness in the sport. So how important do you think that is, sort of this kind of camaraderie and collaboration?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a healthy thing, yeah. Ultimately. I mean, if you look at Manchester, which is, you know, a bit of a hotbed in paddle, the clubs that have opened haven't dented each other at all. You know, horrible phrase, but every boat rises in the tide. So, you know, the more paddle clubs, the more players, the healthier industry. Now, you know, once the market gets saturated, you might want to be a little bit more careful about recommending other clubs. But I think collaboration and working together is a good thing. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, location is pretty key to opening and launching a successful paddle club. And, you know, another piece of data, about 80% of players are within a 30 to 35 minute travel distance of their clubs. And as more clubs open in Nottingham, Leicester, etc., places that haven't been as quick to emerge as Manchester, the players are just there. The players are popping up. You know, demand is completely outstripping supply.
Yeah. Where do you think, you know, if you had to put a prediction on it in 2 years' time, what do you think that travel time might look like?
I mean, 30 minutes to drive to a paddle club seems reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Like I said, the nearest one to me is an hour plus, an hour and 10.
But you don't see that shortening for people as more and more are springing up?
Possibly. I think it's about the quality of the club and the experience you have there. If I've got a choice between driving 30 minutes to a really great club with a really great experience or driving 15 minutes to an average club, I'll probably drive 30.
Yeah. So the experience is key.
I think it's about competing on quality rather than price. You know, you were mentioning whether or not, you know, prices are high in the UK. I don't think they are high. I think they reflect the quality of experience you get when you go to these clubs.
Yeah. And I think also when you're searching for a site, there is, the criteria that you're looking at is there space to have some kind of player experience there, sort of, you know, allow you the space to create that, parking, there's a number of other factors that you're thinking about but for the customer and the customer experience.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think for me, like, it's quite important. If I can travel somewhere, I want to know, like, you know, I'm not going to be struggling to find a parking space to then be rushing to the court, or just even the journey from the car park to the court. Like, how far is it? If it's like, I don't know, I'm playing at 9 p.m. at night, is all these little things you've got to think about to do with the player experience?
Yeah. Warm, clean changing rooms, nice showers, a nice sitting area, decent coffee, a panini, flat screen TV, all of those things that create that vibe and that club vibe, they all add up to the experience the player has. You know, friendly staff, it's that hospitality. Yeah. If you go to a spa weekend at a hotel with your better half, you walk in, you're greeted nicely, it's clean, it's warm, it's friendly, it's that hospitality experience, and paddle is the same.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what differentiates courts from a club, and just popping up courts, as opposed to actually building a paddle club.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what your biggest, you know, WTF moment in paddle has been so far.
I think the thing that surprises me, well, it doesn't anymore, but the thing that puts the biggest smile on my face, and that is one of the best parts of my job, is when I speak to, here's a real example, True Paddle in Durham, couple of really nice guys, Alex and Adam, put their own money on the line, really invested their own time and money and built a really lovely 9 indoor courts in Durham. And they were just, their occupancies were great from day one. They got it right. They built a really nice place. And that sort of success and watching, you know, entrepreneurs invest their own time and money, take that risk, and then for it to work and for their occupants to be really high doesn't surprise me anymore. But it puts a real smile on my face. It's one of the best parts of my job.
Yeah.
Watching people succeed like that.
And if there was one thing you could change about the UK paddle scene, you know, what would you love to change, but you can't yet?
Okay, if I was king for a day. I think women are underrepresented in terms of players. It's about 20, 22%. And I think there's a lot of improvement there, or a lot of room for improvement there. I think juniors are growing, but they need a lot more investment from the likes of the LTA, et cetera, who are beginning, you know, to do that. So, you know, ladies and juniors, I think, are areas in paddle that, you know, could do with some, a bit of an oomph from somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this, I know like movements are starting, but they just need a push.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the stats are like in other sports like tennis, etc. But, you know, 22% of players being female, you know, why is it not 50?
I mean, I was surprised because I thought it was nearing towards 40. So I guess, is this a UK stat or is this a global stat, like a Playtomic?
Well, I only looked at the UK numbers. And of course, it varies club to club and region to region. But I think, based on the numbers that I looked at, it's around 22%.
Like what sort of suggestions would you have that could encourage growth in those areas?
Well, some of the clubs do it already. Things like ladies' social mix-ins, you know, events, tournaments, social activities geared specifically towards ladies because ladies play paddle differently to men, not in terms of technique, etc., but they sort of play typically with ladies, whereas, you know, so they might have a social group, whereas, you know, and apologies, this is going to sound very un-PC, but most of the school runs are done by mums.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. And they would have dropped the kids at school and then gone to Pilates. Now they're dropping the kids at school and going to play paddle with their friends, who are generally other mums. So the a lot of clubs are putting on specific 9 p.m. to 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. lady social mix-ins, which is great, and it's bringing that kind of post-school run audience into their paddle clubs. But it means that they're playing with other ladies.
Yeah, and it's a great time to encourage footfall on your courts as well, because you know the audience is limited for those times, so to speak, as well. So
yeah, I mean peak period is, you know, sort of 3-4 p.m. onwards.
Yeah. Yeah,
as you know.
just to wrap things up, if you had a blank check to grow paddle in the UK tomorrow, because a lot of people that are interested in getting in paddle are going to be tuning in to this, where would you put it first and why?
Where would I spend the money? Wow, you've stumped me. I think I would probably invest in juniors.
Oh, you're not going to give me a location.
Oh, you mean where to put it? Okay. Well, if I were coming at it from a purely business point of view, I would probably build in Glasgow.
Okay.
There are 3 million people in Glasgow.
So everyone's heard it now. There's going to be a mad rush for people hunting for sites there.
And there's not enough paddle. Manchester's very well supplied.
Yeah.
London, Bristol, Birmingham, Leeds, Leicester, Nottingham, the Northeast. You know, there's a lot of activity in those areas. I think Glasgow and Edinburgh are undersupplied.
Okay, so people heard it here first. That's where you need to focus your attentions on. well, thanks so much for your time. Like, I really appreciate you taking the time out to join us.
Time has flown
by. And share your insight. It has. And hopefully we can have you back again as a guest. Yeah, I'm sure like after this episode, we'll have like a rush of, why didn't you ask him this? So we'd love to have you on again if we do more seasons of this.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure.
And if you've enjoyed today's conversation and you are wanting to hear more about the UK paddle scene, about startups, or you're just interested in business in general, then hit follow and subscribe and tune in for our next episode. Thank you.